Hello. How do you do? Welcome to California PC 187, the podcast. 187 is the penal code in California for homicide. Brett, Cheryl and Dwee focus on murders that have taken place primarily in Los Angeles County. Some of the details might be grimy and disturbing. Brett and Cheryl sometimes use potty mouth words and Dutch occasionally barks. Listener discretion is advised.
Murder. You got away with murder. You got away with a lie.
Serial killer. Someone who hates cereal. That serial killer went to jail for killing all the Cheerios.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Wait, sorry, let me clear my throat. I know it's not a good sound for, it's not professional.
It's hoarse.
This is Brett.
This is Cheryl.
Dwee's here. She's doing her nails.
Dwizzle.
Yes, and it's Monday
morning.
I think it's
the 7th.
Yeah, maybe.
Or is it not the 7th? It is. Like my G-Shock. Oh, it's 3/8.
Monday. Okay, it's Monday, 8th. March 8th, 2021, and this is California PC 187.
The podcast.
And we are broken down in our beautiful 2000 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo 2000.
That's too much. Daniel.
Okay.
It's Daniel.
We call him Daniel.
Hey, okay. You ever do that when you were kids, when you were school, did you ever do that, say January, start with the months, and they get behind you, they go January, February, March, and they start marching in your...
No. So, we already did this podcast one time, but we put it through a phonic thing. Anyways, it didn't come out. You couldn't hear us at all. It was like little baby tiny voices. So we're having to redo it again. And I just wanted to do the introduction before Brett runs off to go get spark plugs and hopefully the things that we need to get this baby running again. Because we've been kind of stranded on 2nd and Gaffey in San Pedro, and it's very dangerous right here.
Hey, do you remember that band called The Sparks?
Okay, so anyway, before we get going on today's episode, which we're doing Larry and Roy, the Toolbox Killers, which is, you know, it's been done a lot, but this did happen in the South Bay where we grew up, mainly in you know, like Torrance Beach, Redondo, Hermosa, Manhattan.
South Bay.
And yes, in the South Bay. So, but before that, I wanted to let everyone know, anyone who's listening, that I got a message via YouTube from Michelle Wood, who is Joe Gosinski's sister, and that was the last episode we did on the amazing Mustang Man, Joe Gosinski, whose murder remains unsolved from Torrance, California. He's from Michigan, but the murder happened in Torrance, California. And she wanted me to know that I was wrong when I stated that he was born in 1966 and graduated in 1986. He was actually born in 1966 and graduated in 1984, so he did graduate on time. Then he went on to become a sergeant in the United States military, served in Afghanistan, he served for our country.
Artillery.
And by no means whatsoever did I mean any kind of disrespect. I apologize if it was taken that way. I 100% want his murderers to be caught. I do disagree, though, that Rachel has anything to do with it. That's just my opinion. But other than that, I have no disrespect for Joe Gosinski at all, and I apologize for that. Brett?
Yeah, same here. He served well, honorably discharged. He fought for our rights, our country, our people, and so he has the right to live a prosperous life and not be murdered. And I hope that they bring the culprits to justice, too. And yes. I'm very proud of him for serving, and I think the sister should be very proud of him.
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%.
I know she has a loss that's never gonna heal.
Yeah, so. You know, and my brother just died on December 2nd of 2020, and you know, he died of natural causes. He's only 51 years old, and I just want to blame his I keep wanting to say ex-wife, his wife. I keep wanting to blame her. I just want her to fucking be responsible because she had. Abandoned him. Basically, they had been estranged from each other for 10 years, and then all of a sudden she goes running to Missouri to see what she can get, you know, money wise and to all me that's foul, and that made me feel like she had something to do with it. But you know what, I don't know that for a fact, and I'm just angry and upset and sad.
I think it's kind of weird that like 50-year-old ladies do selfies or whatever.
She's no, 60. She's 76, oh, and my yeah. brother was 51.
Oh, yeah, 76. 76-year-old selfies, I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of whatever. It is what yeah. it is. He, you know, he was in love with her, so that's all I can... I just have to respect that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Brett's going to go do what he has to do. We're going to take a break, obviously a couple hours long break, and then we are going to hopefully get this episode out.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing to me that the guy's going to go over there to service country, go through basic boot, everything, whatever, and go get trained, go to Afghanistan, fight a war for another country for us in our name, be a hero, come back, and then just get killed by just like a meaningless
killing.
By some
fucking gangster,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, some fucking piece of shit, motherfucker.
That's what we think. Some stupid fucking
to, like,
idiot ass motherfucking...
You know, I really feel bad for you.
Quote, unquote, gangster.
And I wish I could ease the pain, but I can't, because I've had losses too, so all I can do is just report yeah. the facts and be supportive of our troops that serve, like Fasetsky.
Anybody, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he was a businessman in California. That's got to be hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, he, you know... He was,
and he had a huge warehouse. I mean, he was very accomplished.
Yeah, and he had a goal, and he said they fell short, and I really apologize for your loss.
Okay, so we are going to take a break, and we'll be back with our story of Larry and Roy, those motherfuckers.
Toolbox killers. Don't get fooled by the sunshine.
Toolbox. A man who is so lame, or so much of a dick, that he is not just a tool, he is an entire toolbox.
Okay, so we're recording on McDonald's free Wi-Fi.
We are?
Yeah.
Okay, didn't know that.
Okay, are you ready?
Ready.
Brett and I were both born in a Southern California region of Los Angeles County known as the South Bay. And the cities that the South Bay is comprised of are Rancho Palos Verdes, Rolling Hills, Rolling Hills Estates, Palos Verdes Estates, Lameda, Torrance, Gardena, Alondra Park, Lawndale, Redondo Beach, Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach, Hawthorne, Del Air, El Segundo, Inglewood, Lenox, Westchester, and Playa del Rey.
South Bay?
That's the South Bay. Within the South Bay, there's an area referred to as the Beach Cities, which are parts of South Torrance, Redondo Beach, and Manhattan Beach. Oh, and Hermosa Beach. All three cities boast their own police departments and do not rely on the Los Angeles sheriffs to provide law enforcement services as Lameda and Compton do. You know, we should do an episode on a murder that happened in El Segundo, because I never hear of anything bad happening in El Segundo. I wonder if, you know?
Has there ever been a murder in San Francisco?
Isn't that like a weird city?
I don't know. I worked there
Look
for
at this
years.
One time, Brett and I, like his grandpa died, like his grandpa that he never knew. Turn that off. His grandpa that he never knew died like in 2010 or 9, and Brett was the only next of kin.
I was Mexican.
You were the only next of kin.
Oh, I was like...
So they contacted him, and his name is Richard Barker. And so, anyway, so we went to... We took the bus, or we walked. I don't know what we did. Did we have our dog then? Did we have Dutch? No, we didn't have her then.
We didn't have Dutch.
Okay, we had cats.
the apartment by under Sandy.
Okay. So we made our way to El Segundo, and I pawned my mother's ring. Anyway, it was just a big drama. And so we made it to his apartment, and we were walking down the street, and let's just say this, okay, it was 2009. We had illegal things on our person.
We did?
Yes, we did. And I just felt so...
Like a weed pipe or something?
You know. Oh. So I felt so, like, convicted just while in that city. Like, there were cameras on us or something. I don't know what it was, because I'm usually not paranoid like that at all, ever. And,
Illegal fireworks?
Probably. Yeah. Anyways, it was against the law. And we just ditched that shit. We threw it away. Remember? We were walking up the street, and I go, we need to fucking get rid of fucking whatever we have that's fucking, like, negative on us. And you're like, why? And I said, because. Brett's always like, why?
You had a good lunch at Ralph's. I remember that.
No, Brett's like this. Brett's like, why? Why? And then as soon as freaking we ditched the freaking whatever, it's like, I'm like, that's why, motherfucker. And I just saved us again. That doesn't happen to us anymore, though, because we're old now and we don't do weird shit like that. But anyway, so growing up at Torrance and the South Bay in general, during the 70s and some of the 80s, always felt safe, and stranger danger, that quote-unquote stranger danger, was not, I never even heard of that till I was old, and I thought it was such a funny term, was not a worry of the overall community. On weekends and throughout the summer, and like on holidays, like Christmas holidays, 2 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Easter holiday is a week. Neighborhoods full of kids would take off together on their bicycles, and they'd be gone all day, bicycling miles away from home to play at one of the many nice, wholesome parks, or to go to the liquor store, Drug King, or 7-Eleven to buy bags of candy and soda and go somewhere away from parents to enjoy gorging ourselves on Now and Laters, Abba Zabba's, Chico Sticks, and Hubba Bubble Gum.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Hubba Bubble Gum.
I remember the Bubblicious Hubba Bubba and...
Do you remember that commercial?
Juicy Fruit.
Hubba Bubba Bubble Gum.
Yeah. it was the first square gum to come out.
Do you remember that one commercial? It was for El Paso Picante Sauce. Is all, darling,
New York City.
We're going to have to shut you down.
Oh, I don't remember that. Yeah. I remember New York City. I remember when the bull walks through, like, Merrill Lynch and everybody listened.
All right. I remember when I was little in the 70s, and it's like, I'd like to teach the world to sing.
Oh, yeah. That was it. Remember that? Did you ever see the commercial with that doll we just watched on the crazy, the Laugh-A-Lot Sally, whatever?
I never saw that. That was like 60s or 50s. That was creepy. No. Or what is it? Ancient Chinese Secret, huh?
Oh, yeah. What about Slinky?
Slinky, what a wonderful toy.
Slinky, was good for a girl and a boy. That was creepy. You know.
I had a Slinky and it never did what I wanted.
No.
It never went down the stairs. Yeah. It never did anything.
No. Mine never did either, not like the commercial.
Hey, but look at, but my brother's Evil Knievel that I used to steal behind his back.
Yeah.
It always, like, did a flip for me.
No, mine never did. I didn't have one.
I had that Evil Knievel motherfucking down.
Nope.
And look at, and you know what else I had?
What?
I think it might have started out as my brother's toy, but then I ended up with it because my brother was like, I don't want to fuck with dolls.
Yeah.
But, it was...
What? Well, so you just took over his shit.
The $6 million man.
Hey, get your hand off me. Don't touch me. You're fucking with the $6 million man, okay?
Shut up. You don't even like that guy.
Yeah, I don't now, but...
It had one eye, one eye. It had where you could look through it.
Yeah, I didn't have the doll. I didn't have dolls. I didn't have dolls.
$6 million.
I saw other friends that had... It was bunk. It was. You look through the eye, all I could see is nothing. It was the same thing. It was just a hole in the eye.
Like his x-ray vision.
Yeah.
Who was that? Lee Major.
Lee Majors. Know him well. Met him. Hashtag whatever freaking.
Excuse me.
Because you know what happened was he gave his wife over to, you know,
Brian O'Neill.
Yeah, Ryan O'Neill was, you know,
yeah,
brought him to dinner and he had to split and he was a cheater.
Okay, so
I was like, "Where's Farrah Fawcett?"
Okay, so
I was like, seven.
"Excuse me."
Shut up, kid.
We'd sometimes go to a nearby school's baseball field and play baseball. Sometimes going into the ninth inning, we'd practice sliding into the bases. We gotta hurry up. We'd practice sliding into the bases. My favorite baseball game of all time was pickle. That's where you have two base players, and then you have people running back and forth, like trying to steal bases, and if you get tagged out, then you become a base player. And I was a really good runner. I used to love to slide, and it was so much fun.
So how many people you have to do that?
You have to have two base players, and they throw back and forth.
Oh, so you have to have
and then there's runners. There could be a lot of runners.
You had that many friends?
Yeah.
I didn't have that many friends.
Well, they weren't really my friends. They were my brother's friends, but they let me play because I was good at it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My best friend Kim and I were first allowed to walk to the corner store, Frank's Liquor, to buy candy and ice cream for ourselves and to play video games, arcade games like, what were those ones that they had on Atari in the beginning?
Pong. What?
Okay, and also Space Invaders.
Oh, Space Invaders? Yeah, that was the one OG one.
Yeah, and then later on when I was like 10, it was like Ms. Pac-Man, totally.
Yeah. Space Invaders was Asteroids, Space Invaders.
Okay, but they first allowed us to walk to the store, Kim's dad and my mom, when we were 5 together. My mom would write me notes to give the liquor store owner to buy her a pack of Kent King cigarettes for 65 cents a pack. And she was like, "You know what? When they get to be 75 cents a pack, I'm quitting. When they get to be 85 cents a pack, I'm quitting. Wow. If they get to be 95 cents a pack, I'm quitting."
Like 11 bucks now.
And now they're like $10. Yeah. Remember on the way to bury my dad in Montana in 2006, we stopped at State Line in Nevada, and it was fucking $10.
Yep.
And I was like, "Oh my god!"
That was when
my mom would die.
Yeah, that was when it hit ten. I think it was like when it hit that much because we didn't smoke.
No, we did.
No, we
had quit smoking.
We started
the day my dad died. We started smoking again.
Yep. That day, what did we do?
Oh, because that was stressful as fuck.
We smoked.
Yeah, we did. We went.
We had a plan.
We went straight to the liquor store and we got a pack of cigarettes.
Oh, this is what we're gonna plan. We're gonna take care of business. We're gonna smoke. We're gonna take care of business, and then when we're done, we're
smoke cigarettes. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we're just gonna relax.
Ugh.
And pip a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, our parents left us at the Rolling Hills or Delano Mall theaters all day long by ourselves to binge watch movies like Grease, Saturday Night Fever, or E.T. Of course, they gave us specific instructions to stick together, and they usually gave the oldest person in the group or the most responsible, quote-unquote, person, like, the change to go call and check in.
Oh, yeah, the payphones.
Mm-hmm.
Did you remember that Bugsy Malone?
No, and they told us not to talk to strangers. We gotta hurry up, because this is dying.
Okay, go.
So, what might now seem like irresponsible, neglectful, or just plain crazy behavior on the parts of our parents to give elementary school or junior high school students freedoms, like, such as we had, was normal back then. It was normal. We were growing up, we had a ton of fun and always made sure we were inside before the streetlights went on. There simply was no sense of fear and danger. There really wasn't. Then suddenly, frightened and concerned parents like mine began sitting their kids down and giving them serious talks about strangers in vans. They warned us to steer clear of any vans, especially white ones, but vans.
My grandpa drove a van.
And especially ones that had no windows.
He didn't have any windows.
Just doors on the sides that quickly slid, opened, and shut.
They didn't shut like that.
They warned us that there were nasty, bad, murdering monsters inside those vans that if you walked by one on the way to or from school or the store, the sliding door would suddenly slide open.
Snatch you up.
And like a troll, like under the bridge, like under the Billy Goat's Gruff Bridge, would just snatch you. And he would pull you inside the van and then slam the door shut. And then you would never be seen or heard from again. That's
never.
It. You're a done deal. You're
never.
Over. You're gone. You're dead.
Never led.
Yep. You're like done. So it's like pretty much like if you're kidnapped, you're dead. That's pretty much what.
No more Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
No more Disneyland. No more pickle.
No more freaking Abraham Lincoln, robot Abraham Lincoln at Disneyland.
You go to the cups or you go to
No more People Mover.
Yeah, nope. Space Mountain, nope. The Haunted Mansion, nope.
Right?
Well, maybe kind of the Haunted Mansion.
My mom likes the Haunted Mansion a lot. Okay, so they warned us not to take candy from strangers and never to believe a stranger who might try to pick you up from school, stating that he or she was sent to get you as your parents had been in a terrible accident and were comatose in a hospital somewhere. Actually, they never said a she. They always said it was going to be a he. They always said it was going to be a man.
I always thought man in a trench coat, like with naked underneath and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, flashers too, yeah, yes. Flashers. They were just the flashers.
They come from New York or what?
Us kids all started wearing ID bracelets that we ordered each year from our school. And mine was so cute. Like, I couldn't wait to order my ID bracelet every year. The world and all the people in it suddenly became suspect, and my best friend Kim and I especially worried about white vans and men with mustaches. And I remember one time we were waiting for my mother to come out of Alpha Beta. She was grocery shopping, and we stayed in her Ford station wagon waiting for her, and we saw this man with a mustache walking into the store, and we said, "Mustache man."
Mustache
man. And he waited for my mom and told on us, and we got in trouble.
Oh, shit.
I think I got my mouth washed out with Tabasco sauce.
Really?
Yeah. For calling him a mustache man.
Okay. Was he Mexican?
Dude. That Tabasco was like sauce. Way out of control.
I thought it was soap. Jesus Christ. That was the only threat. I did get my mouth.
No, my mother washed my mouth with Tabasco sauce a couple times. What happened to create such hysteria in our community and get everyone's minds so twisted? Who or what was this boogeyman or the boogeyman? Lawrence Sigmund Bittaker and Roy Lewis Norris. Also known as the Toolbox Killers.
Yeah.
So we're going to call them Larry and Roy. So Larry Bittaker and Roy Norris. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Toolbox Killers.
Larry and Roy kidnapped, raped, tortured, and murdered 5 teenage girls from the South Bay over a 5-month period of time, from June 24th to October 31st, 1979. The men were apprehended on November 20th, 1979. However, their short-lived reign of terror forever scarred the innocence that once prevailed in the South Bay and beyond. Lawrence Sigmund Bittaker, Larry, was born on September 27th, 1940 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and died at the old age of 79 on San Quentin's death row on December 13th, 2019. Roy Lewis was born on February 5th, 1948 in Greeley, Colorado, and died just 1 year ago on February 24th, 2020 at the age of 72 in the California Medical Facility at Vacaville, California. He had been sentenced to life imprisonment without parole eligibility beginning until 2010. And I guess he just didn't even go. He was like, fuck it, I'm not even going to go. So Larry was a thief, robbery with assault. He was in and out of California Youth Authority from the time he was like 13, 14. He was in jails and prisons. And then as soon as he turned of age, he went to federal prison. His parents decided or realized that they didn't want to have children, so they put him up for adoption. His family members adopted him, like probably his aunt and uncle or something like that, adopted him. And, you know, I mean, he got adopted within his family, for crying out loud, when he was a baby. Mm-hmm. He was still bitter and resentful, and so he turned to a life of crime, and that's what he was. He was a thief. Roy Lewis Norris, Roy, became a sex offender from age 16, and he said that the reason why was because his parents also didn't want children, put him and his sister, like, just let them go in and out of foster care. And what happened with them is he said that he got molested by Mexicans, and that turned him into a sex offender.
Oh, shit.
So at the age of 16, he told his cousin that he wanted to touch her boobie, and she told her dad, which was his dad's brother, so his uncle. And then his dad took him home and beat his ass and put him down and made him feel like shit. So he drove to the mountains somewhere and tried to put air in his vein.
He tried to kill himself
by putting air in his nose. That is so whack. Who puts a needle in their arm at age 16? That's crazy. From then on, he spent time in state mental hospitals and was diagnosed as schizoid affected. And you know how they have to silence the juvenile record or whatever.
Oh, yeah, they have to seal it.
Okay, so yeah, they can seal the juvenile record. Yeah. So he was able to enter the military. and during the Vietnam era. So he did go to Vietnam, and this is what a lot of people want to put him down for. I'm not standing up for him, but I'm just saying he signed up for the military during the Vietnam War era, and he didn't see action. But, like, the thing is, he still went to fucking Vietnam, and that's scary. So he served our country, and he started trying to rape and molest women out in Vietnam. And so rather than
it's not funny.
No, it's not funny, but no. It's just like, what the fuck? So they honorably discharge him, having the military psychologist classify him as a mentally disordered sex offender. Like, you know, I would like to think today that they would dishonorably discharge somebody that was like that.
No, medical's not their fault.
But I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he was honorably discharged with that diagnosis.
Well, I mean, back then, I guess they figured they're just I don't know. I don't know how they thought of my dad. I thought everybody did that after I started the stories that
went on. That's crazy.
I don't know.
So after attacking a woman on campus at San Diego State University, where he struck her with a rock in broad daylight, he does this, and tried to rape her. He tried to rape her. He was sentenced to 5 years in Atascadero State Mental Hospital.
Oh, yeah, he's twisted.
Yeah. And that's where Edmund Kemper was. In 1975, Norris was released from Atascadero and considered, quote, no longer a threat to others, unquote. He was given 5 years probation. He moved to the city, to the beach city of Redondo Beach with his mother. And one evening while out cruising the streets of Redondo on his motorcycle, he saw a woman. She was exiting a restaurant. She was walking down the street towards her house. And he, like, motors up to her. And he's like, would you like a ride?
Beach bum birds.
I got an extra helmet.
Yeah.
And she's like,
hey.
Yeah, no, I picture him being like more like, would you like a ride?
Yeah, well, sure.
Like all creepy and shit.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, thank you. And so she keeps walking. And he jams up. And she had a scarf on her. She had a scarf around her neck. He takes her scarf, strangles her with it. He doesn't kill her, but he gets her, you know, basically in a position behind a bush or something where he rapes her.
What the fuck?
He raped her.
Like right there, I figured, you know, on the back of his motorcycle.
Yes, it's totally disgusting.
You're gonna rape someone and pick him up, but you at least have a car. I mean,
it was not until a year later that the rape victim had spotted Norris again, or spotted Roy again on that very same motorcycle, and turned him into the police. He was arrested, convicted, and sent to California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo, where he met his soon-to-be best friend forever,
BFF,
Lawrence Bittaker.
Okay.
A.K.A. Larry. So, I bet Whittaker.
So one's a thief and one's a...
one's a rapist.
Rapist.
So when they first made acquaintance, when they first became acquaintances, Larry mistook Roy as being some hardcore motorcycle gang, jewelry boosting, drug running, tough guy criminal.
Yep.
He didn't think of him as a rapist at all. Yep. He's kind of scared of him.
Leader of
the pack. It turned out, the small but scrappy Larry saved Roy from getting beaten and killed on several occasions while the men were in prison together.
Not even a good rapist, really.
No, he keeps getting caught before he can even rape.
Whatever that means, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty gross. Roy taught Larry how to make jewelry, and the two men, with IQs of 130 and 150 respectively, enjoyed playing games of chess.
Okay.
Roy confided in Larry his list of sexual assaults, which probably most of them were lies.
Oh, they're giving the rundowns.
This is what I did.
I robbed this, I stole this, I did it. And he's like, well, I tried to rape this girl.
Yeah, and Roy told Larry, he said, the best part about raping women is the fear, the look of fear and terror in their eyes when I attack them.
Yeah, oh, he never really...
And Larry was like, oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He's like, fuck yeah. So the two men put their heads together.
They're blowing smoke up each other's ass.
Right? They put their heads together, and Larry's like, I think I'd like to try some of that.
I'm gonna try some of that. Let me get some of that.
Right? So they decide that once they get out of prison, that they're going to hook up, and that they are going to become rapist murderers together.
I wonder if anybody really thought, well, you know, I'm just bullshit and I ain't gonna really hook up, you know?
Yeah, I know, right? Because you make plans with people in jail and you never follow through.
Yeah, you're just like,
oh yeah, I'll call you. Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, yeah, we're gonna be best friends. Yeah, we're never gonna see each other again. Let's admit it right now.
8 by 8 and the spoon by noon, back to the pan by 10.
Right, well, these two followed through. Larry got out first. He got out on October 15th, 1978. And once he got out, he got a job immediately as a skilled machinist.
Wow.
He was making $1,000 a week, which equals, in today's money, that equals $111.99, something like that.
Oh, they were balling out of control.
No, Larry was, because Roy was still in prison.
Oh, okay.
What Larry did, though, was he was like, I don't know why. I know he's from California, or where is he from? Pittsburgh. But I know that he didn't speak like a country person, but that's so fucked up of me, huh, to say. For some reason, I think he did.
One of them didn't talk like that, but he's in court.
No, but I got to get me some teenage friends. So he, instead of renting an apartment, which he totally could have, he gets himself like motels, yeah, where you have a kitchenette,
right.
You know, where it's like a little tiny apartment.
So he was the one that was serious and about he this. Starts, he starts, yes, yes. He's
and so he does Teenage Girl 101 with himself, where he invites teenage girls and teenage boys both right. over to his apartment. He has pot, he has soda, he has
how
beer.
How to talk to them.
He studies the ways of the teenage girl.
Right. Oh, yeah.
How to lure them in, yes. What the right and wrong things are to say to them. Yes. You know, how to get them, you know, on his side.
Right.
So that they'll, you know, in the future, when Roy gets out of prison, get in their
right.
vehicle, so whatever vehicle it is that they have.
Sometimes you have to dress up like a wolf.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Right.
He's a sheep in wolf's clothing.
Yes, he's a sheep in wolf's clothing.
Right.
And he actually was friends with parents, the community. They liked him a lot.
Okay.
He not only, he was helpful to everybody, but he also donated money to the Salvation Army. And he would buy a ton of food, a ton of wine, take right. it down to Skid Row, feed the homeless people. And he just, everybody liked him.
He thought of himself
as a loner, as a person that people hated.
Right.
And he hated people. But in all actuality, if he would have given himself half a chance and not
right.
become a fucking stupid, psycho, weirdo fuckface,
right.
he probably could have gotten along well in his community and turned
anyway,
his life around.
Yeah, got money. He's just, you know, social
you know?
Fucking, you know.
Yeah, so, social
skills
butterfly.
Are fucking better, you know.
He, social
he,
butterfly.
He needed to do all that crazy shit he was doing.
Right? So then Roy gets out in January of 1979, and the two men hook up right away. Roy moves in with his mother first in Redondo Beach again, and he gets a job in Compton as an electrician, making more money than Larry does.
Right.
So these two men have a lot of money,
okay.
which is why they were able to afford all that Polaroid film. Because what they start doing is they do Teenage Girl 101 together.
Right.
So they... Wait, we're going to have to pause here because... We're going to have to go over the steps that they took to get to where they got.
Okay.
Okay. See you soon.
Creeper van. Those scary vans that pedophiles and rapists like to drive. They are often used to transport groups of people or equipment, but can also be used by weirdos to kidnap and rape people in the back. They are often, but not always white, and the weirdest ones don't have windows in the back. Here are three sentences using the term creeper van. Why is that creeper van parked at a school? Stay away from that creeper van. Who knows who's driving it? Don't buy a creeper van if you don't have to, because it makes you seem weird.
Okay, so we're back, and we are going to get into, you know, Larry and Roy have been reunited. And
reunited and you.
They're all together again.
Parole, stroll, let's get some hoes.
So they start out with step one, and step one is where they get that GMC silver cargo van, and they name it the Murder Mac. And what they do to the GMC Murder Mac is they make sure that they have a tape cassette player in there so that they can play heavy metal music. So like speed metal and, you know, all this crazy music, so that when they do eventually get a girl into one of their vans, they turn up the music really loud so that nobody can hear The screaming.
Silent scream.
Yes.
That's a song.
Step two, they start hunting their victims, and they kind of do like how Larry had done a teenage girl 101, you know, where he had him over to his motel room and just, you know, studied their ways. The two of them go out together. They go driving up and down Pacific Coast Highway with a Polaroid camera that Larry had purchased. And ultimately, I just want to say this, ultimately he took 600 pictures altogether.
Damn.
Okay. And I know for a fact, because my brother and I got in super bad trouble for this in the 70s. My parents had gone out on to dinner or something like that. They left us home alone because parents did that back then a lot. And we got into their Polaroid camera and we took like a gajillion pictures.
Should I be playing dun 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 dun? Dun.
No.
Freeze frame.
No. And it was like $25 for a 10 pack of Polaroid film. So 600 pictures, this motherfucker paid. They're spending money on film. I just wanted to say
no
that.
Ballers,
so
man.
What they did was they would go out and they would go out on the beach. They would go out on the sand. They would together. They would walk up to teenage girls and they would tell them, "Oh, you're pretty. We're modeling agents and we'd like to see if we could take your picture." And of course, most girls, you know, would like yes and pose for the pictures. But what they were also doing was feeling out like the dynamic, like the nature of like how this was going to work between the two of them.
They were creepy. They were creepy.
Well, no, what they realized was is that people, girls, were not creeped out by Larry, who to me is the creepier looking one. They were fucking tripped out by Roy. They were like, he's like, "Can I touch your boobie?" Yeah.
Boobie.
Yeah. The, you know, the professional rapist here.
Master.
And the girls just, they repelled from him. They like, you know, as if they just, like as if they touched a hot stove or something, they just fucking could not stand him. So what the two men decided was that, okay, you're going to have to hide in the back. When we're going to pick up these girls because they don't want to see you.
That's crazy. You gotta hide.
They won't get in the van if they see you.
In the closet, man.
Yeah. So that's what they worked all that stuff out. It took them about 3-4 months, you know, before they finally did their.
And dude, you're scaring all the chicks away, dude. What the fuck, man? Your presence is creepy. I think you're creepy. Fuck. What the fuck?
Okay, so step three.
You just always like, you make noises when you breathe, dude.
Right? You're snorting. You're like salivating. Nah, you're like, ew.
It's coming from like a low growl in your stomach.
I know,
shit.
Right?
Yeah.
You like get a weird twitch.
I
like,
can tell you want to fucking, you're waiting for something to happen.
I know, right? He gets like freaking like, he gets like, what do you call it? Like, what is that? Like that one guy that we were hanging out with had,
you started talking shit. Or who?
Yeah, no, where he had that you know, it's that.
He started taking his clothes
it's
off.
It's that disorder where they just say shit.
Oh,
where he was like, "Motherfucker,"
yeah,
and then he'd be talking to us normal, and he'd be like, "Fuck you."
I wanted to fuck me in the ass. I was like, "What the fuck are you talking to me? Are you?" You're asleep. I'm like, "What?
What
the
is that called?"
I have no idea. It's like called fucking gay. I don't know.
No, it's a true problem that a lot of people have. It's
no
really
one
sad.
Gay.
Okay,
you mushrooms from him. Remember the mushrooms you bought?
Yeah.
They went bad.
And that was disgusting. So, step three, they needed to secure a remote hideaway. So, they went to the San Gabriel Mountains because one of them had been in fire camp or something like that. And so, they went up to a fire spot, like where that had a gate and it had lock on it. So they cut the lock on the gate and they put their own lock on there. And then they set up their little murder kits and it made it so that it was their own remote fire zone that was just, you know, all theirs. And it was far away from where anybody could hear or help. Step four, they modified the murder Mac with a special bed they hid. As they took out the seats or whatever, and then they put a special bed that they bolted to the floor. They also bolted a toolbox to the floor that they put torture tools in. They put in pliers, a sledgehammer, hacksaw. What else?
Coat hangers.
Coat hangers.
The fuck
yes.
Was the coat hanger
coat
for?
Hangers. They also had cameras and
monkey wrench, fucking
yeah,
Phillips heads.
Yes.
Fucking. Screwdrivers.
Yes, ice picks.
Ice picks. Well, yes. It's not really a tool. That's
more for it's just gross.
Yeah. Drills.
Yeah.
They didn't have really drills. They didn't have cordless drills back in the day.
I don't know. Yeah. And later on, they got an audio recorder. They also put a cooler with beer and soft drinks in there and snacks.
You know, you've always got to entertain your fucking guests.
So they're ready for their final step to go out and get somebody.
Kill.
So...
this is like fucking murder by the numbers 101, huh?
This is their plan, yeah. You know? So, in their days together in prison, fantasizing of the future tortured murder aspirations, Roy teased Larry that he wouldn't be able to go through with any of it and that he'd chicken out.
Oh, peer pressure.
To the contrary, Larry must have taken his BFF's chiding as a serious challenge, and in his first rape, torture, murder with Roy... Larry proved to be so foul and evil in his sadistic, calculated, and apathetic approach that he actually caused the quote-unquote pro-rapist, Roy, to vomit and have to walk away.
Fucking curling screams, fucking twisting of the nipples, fucking cutting out, fucking...
So the first girl that they got, she was a...
Let's listen to the video. Or the audio, the fucking...
The audio? Yeah. You want the lady to tell the story?
No, listen to the audio, the fucking scream, the...
No, Brett! We're not gonna... Don't even go there. She was kidnapped in an alley in Torrance.
What?
I think she went to the Good Shepherd's Church on PCH. She was going there, or St. Peter's... I don't know, she was at a church on PCH. She was a very religious girl. She was like... 16 years old, she was religious, she was a good girl, she was very beautiful, she was a striking, beautiful blonde girl, she did what she was told, she got good grades in school, you know, she was told to go, you know, to the church group, the youth group, walk straight home, and, you know, she did what she was told, so that's what she did. She was walking straight home from the church function, and they saw her, and they're like,
pretty woman walking down the street.
And they asked her if she wanted a ride, and she was like, no, thank you. And she just kept walking, you know, keeping her face straight ahead. And they, I think she went down an alleyway. Like, but they're not really alleys. They're kind of like streets and alleys. They're alleys named with street names. In the beach area.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
Like Hermosa.
Yeah.
So she was going down one of those, and, they drove up way ahead of her, and Roy jumped out and was pretending like he was fixing something. And, you know, she must have, there must have been something in her gut, but maybe she didn't want to show fear. I don't know. Or maybe she was just that naive, you know?
It was Torrance, man. What the fuck? She didn't know to worry about.
Yeah, so she walked by them, and Roy snatched her up, put his hand over her mouth, drug her in the van, tied her down. He hit her in the head with something. Oh, he
a tool?
Hit with a tire iron.
Oh shit! All those tools, and you got a tire iron. Fucking, that's crazy.
Yeah, totally. And then the fucking trolls turned up the music.
Oh, okay. Hell yeah.
They turned up the music.
They did.
So that, you know, before they to get so that nobody could hear her screaming as they headed off, speeding down the road.
Well, I mean, you know, he was in the back seat. The dude was driving, so they had to. He was tying her up, so
yes,
he didn't come on right away.
Yeah. Yes, the music did come on right away, pretty sure. As soon as they got him in there, because they didn't, you know, just in case she was screaming. You know what I mean? Yeah, the van door slid open, and with one arm around her neck, the other hand smothering the screams, trying to escape from her mouth. And with one foul swoop, the van door was slammed shut. Larry blasted heavy metal music to drown out any sound from being overheard. Norris immediately beat Cindy with blunt force object, handcuffed her, took Polaroids of her while she was cried in terror. It's disgusting. And so they took her out to the San Gabriel Mountains into the remote fire area that they had sectioned off for themselves.
The first
and,
kill.
And this is their first kill together.
Fresh,
yes.
First kill.
And they, I think, I'm pretty sure that Roy, because Larry's like, well, you're the professional. So Roy got the first shot at her. And then Larry did, and they just traded her back and forth, and beating her, slapping her, and she kept asking, when Roy had her, he told her that everything was going to be fine, that she wasn't going to, just to acquiesce, just to do follow their directions.
She knew from that one dude, the creepy motherfucker.
Yes, and that she wasn't going to get murdered. And so then, ultimately, the two men got in a fight, they went off somewhere, and they had a heated conversation where Roy's like...
Where's she at?
I don't know. Probably tied up in the van or something. Oh, yeah. And Roy said, I promised her that we weren't going to kill her. And
he's like, no, I want to kill
her. Yeah, I don't want to kill her. Yeah. He was turning his stomach. And Larry's like, no, you know what? He's like, we are not going to let her go because...
We do a lick, we do it all the way.
Yeah, you don't understand. If she identifies us, then we're going to get... We could possibly get life in prison. You know, this is kidnapping and this is rape and
all about them.
Yeah, and I'm not going back to prison, motherfucker.
Let's have some fun.
Yeah, so... This is the thing that was so great about her, though, is that, you know, at first she screamed, but then she just kind of got, like, a quiet, like, a peacefulness over her, and she didn't give them any reaction after that, and that's what they wanted. You know, that was
she's with the Lord already.
She probably was. She there was something...
No, probably
she's,
what scared dude
she's
to not want to kill her.
Yeah. Praying inside of her head and just telling herself, don't give them anything. So she didn't cry. She didn't, like, you know... She didn't...
She took it like a champ.
Yeah, she took it like a champ. And that's kind of what Roy said later, that he couldn't believe it. And so she asked, okay, I know you're going to kill me. Would you please at least let me pray? And Larry said, fuck no. No, you're not going to get to pray. And so he tried to get Roy to... So Roy tried to strangle her first, and Roy couldn't do it. Roy got sick and threw up and walked away. So Larry's like, God damn it. So he got a wire hanger... And he put it around her neck, and then he couldn't do it with just the wire hanger, so he got pliers, and he twisted the back.
He cheated.
He twisted the wire hanger tightly around her neck until she died. And then, I guess they
like
just...
one of those wind-up fucking planes, and it was the little kids, when I was a kid, they had those little rubber band planes.
Yeah, so then they just threw her off the side of a mountain. She was never to be seen or found again, and she is on the Charlie Project website. Andrea Joy Hall was born on October 21st, 1960, in Akron, Ohio, where she lived until she moved to Southern California in February of 1978. She also was a beautiful blonde.
California.
She was 18. She was 5'7". She was tall, pretty. Maybe she came out here to try to be a model. I don't know. She was hitchhiking, and she was picked up by the Murder Mac in June of 1979 and never seen again. According to Roy Norris, she shared a similar fate as Cindy and was left in the same place in the San Gabriel Mountains, and her body was also never to be found. So then there's Jackie Gillian and Leah Lamp. And Leah Lamp's both of their names are Jacqueline. And Leah's name is actually Jacqueline Leah Lamp, but she went by Leah Lamp.
So they tried two this time?
They got two of them. Oh, Jackie was 15, and Jackie was a beautiful blonde. Leah was 13, she was a beautiful brunette. But I guess the men preferred blondes. So they kind of like put funny? Down, they put, oh yeah, the men preferred blondes. But so they put Leah down a lot, and they didn't want to rape her. So they just basically tortured her.
Oh, that, okay.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah, that's correct. That's fucking
Yeah, they
twisted.
Took them up to a remote area.
You're not going to fucking rape me.
What happened was that they were cruising along
the beach
roads, and mainly PCH, hunting teenage girls to rape and torture. And They found these two girls were hitchhiking, and they got in, they were smoking pot, and they thought everything was going to be cool. And then at some point, the men weren't going where they said that they were going, like taking the girls home. They went and parked in some crazy...
Oh, going there. Yeah, we're going to Hermosa.
Yeah, and then that's when the girls tried to fight and get out of the van, and that's when they...
Though. Yeah, we're going.
Yeah, that's when they turned up the music, and that's when they subdued the girls, tied them up. Yeah. And took them.
Hey, isn't this Lawndale? Aren't we on the freeway? No, this is the beach, man. Yeah. We have another beer.
Yes.
You're cool. Yes.
And so then that's when they took them away. And they kept them alive and, like, play. Like you know how when a cat catches a mouse and it, like, lets it go and then it catches it again and it tortures it for hours?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what they did with these two girls. And mostly Jackie, the older girl. And finally, Roy said that...
Grass?
Right. Roy said that he turned his back on the whole situation. And, because Larry was just getting sicker and sicker with it. You know, he was just getting more demented, more twisted.
We're not going to kill you.
Yeah, he was taking...
Weirdos or what?
He was using vice grips. He was removing their nipples. He was doing all kinds of stuff that was really, really foul. And finally, how he killed Jackie, the older girl, was by putting ice picks in her ears. That is horrible. And then they had kind of let Leah think that the 13-year-old think that she was going to get away, but no. She also ended up being raped and murdered, and they just were dumped and left. Their bodies were just left, just on the ground.
I don't even think I could get hard for something like that.
I know, it's so disgusting.
Shit like that. They're talking about dudes getting raped.
It's so foul.
I don't think I could. I would hope I wouldn't get, because I don't watch. I don't get my into that.
It's gross. So there was a girl named Shirley Sanders, who was hitchhiking, and she got away on September 30th, 1979. And because she got away, they were like, oh, shit, maybe we shouldn't do this for now.
You think?
So, anyway, they were a month later on October 31st, 1979, Halloween night, they were driving in Sun Valley for some reason. And there was a girl named Lynette Ledford, and she was also a beautiful young woman. And she, Larry recognized her from fucking, where did he recognize her from? He recognized her from a McDonald's. He used to go to McDonald's every morning where she worked. She recognized him too. And he's like, hey, would you like a ride?
She's like,
oh my gosh, yeah, totally. Yeah. I would love a ride. Thank you. They tortured her the worst out of anybody. And
like overkill.
It was overkill. Yeah. It was really, really bad. Got her in there and did all of the same atrocities with the same tools. I don't want to get into, you know, I think that, you know, by telling the first story, we pretty much told all, you know, what they did to all of them. But with her, they recorded, there's like 17 minutes of...
It's the murder mag. I can't control it.
There's 17 minutes of audio in which she's just being absolutely tortured. And she's begging for her life, and they're making her do all kinds of things. It's mostly Larry.
You know, people are out there that are sick as me. If you know, you don't know I'm sick, but I am. You look for it, and you know you can't find it. It's not out there. I've looked and looked and searched and searched.
For what?
To listen to it.
Oh, yeah. It's well, I don't want to hear it.
Okay,
and
well, I
read the transcript, and it's disgusting, and I shouldn't even have done that. It's bad. And this is the point where, see, like, the very first kill, when Larry saw Roy throw up, during the murder of Lucinda Cindy Schaefer, he was like, oh, yeah. And so the roles reversed in that Larry was kind of like looking to Roy as to show him the ways of rape. Mm-hmm. And in he quickly saw that when Roy threw up that he was going to have to take over. And he just became sick with it, evil with it. And with Lynette Ledford, he told Roy, you have to fucking get your hands dirty, motherfucker.
Yeah, you
need to kill somebody.
I need to see you do some dirt.
So he killed her with a sledgehammer. And then they drove to Hermosa Beach and dumped her on someone's front lawn. And they posed her in like a creepy position.
Damn.
And it was all over the news the next day, of course.
I don't remember that shit. I really don't.
Yeah. Well, while all this was going on, we were kids, Brett. It was 1979. I was... Seven.
I was hitchhiking with my dad as a little fucking tot. A little tight tot. I had a toolbox when I was a kid. A little clay toolbox looking thing.
You know what?
What?
Meanwhile, Roy had been having one too many drinks with an old prison pal, Jimmy Dalton, and spilled his guts out about the murders he and Larry had committed. Jimmy was mortified by Roy's stories as he had two teenage daughters of his own. However, he did not really believe Roy's stories either, as he'd known Larry to talk dirty about women or rape, and he figured that Roy was being drunk and all stupid and just making shit up.
Well, if I rape chicks, I was a rapist, I wouldn't talk about it because that's embarrassing.
Yeah. You know? Well, he'd never known Larry to be like a rapist. So he's like, I don't know. This doesn't match up. After Jimmy heard the news about Lynette Ledford and that she was found deceased on a random front lawn of someone in Hermosa Beach, the shocking details of the injuries that she sustained sounded eerily familiar. So he called his attorney, and he and his attorney went to the LAPD with the stories.
Because he was just a kind man, or what? He had some...
Yeah, he had two teenage daughters. Oh, everyone that goes to prison is a fucking child killer, raper, molester.
Well, if they were on the same yard together, they were definitely in a fucking, you know, whatever.
But... Brett, you don't know that. Okay, you're not the one that puts people together in fucking prison, okay?
Oh.
You don't work for the prison system.
You're right.
Okay.
So he tells people.
Yeah. So he had a buddy that does not everybody, like I said, not everybody's a raper. I mean, come on. People are extortionists and whatever
are. What was his crime? What was he in for?
I don't know. I don't care. I just know he was in prison with fucking Roy and Larry. So, he told the police that what Roy had told him over drinks about the similar murders, and the LAPD were like, yeah, okay, whatever, guy. And they referred him to the Hermosa Beach investigator, Paul Bynum, who believed Jimmy and put a tail on Roy Norris. Immediately, undercover police were following Roy Norris. And they literally witnessed this fool fucking in the front window of his apartment in Redondo Beach with a scale and a grip of marijuana weighing out baggies.
Drug dealers?
Roy was a drug dealer. He dealt pot.
Oh, shit.
And he, aside from his job as an electrician, and he was in the front window, dude. Like, in the front fucking window. Like,
naked?
No. With a scale and what a big-ass stash of spot.
Right on the Esplanade, probably. Esplanade. Just like,
weighing out baggies. And they're like, you know what I mean?
Weed was like a big thing back
That's
then.
All they needed to give him a probation or a parole violation and to get him in there. Mm-hmm. To get him into the station. And they like questioned him. They asked him if he knew anything about...
Greco. What was that place called? Greco?
About Lynette Ledford. And he spilled his guts out immediately. And he mostly blamed Larry, but he told them everything, every detail. So this was on November 20th of 1979. So then he talked to the investigators. He took them to Jackie and Leah's bodies that, you know, were skeletonized by now. And so they knew that what he was saying was true. And then he said that he would testify against Larry. Mm-hmm. And you know, in order just to get life in prison,
right,
and not to get the death penalty.
Camp San Luis Obispo, shit.
Yes. So they found the tape, the Ledford tape, the horrible tape in his truck, in Roy's truck. So what they did was the next day on November 21st, they got warrants out for both men's apartments and their vehicles, and they arrested Larry, and they found 600 Polaroids. Not all of them were murder victims. A lot of them were just when they were out there taking pictures, pretending like they were modeling people, you know,
yeah,
modeling
agent.
Agents.
Agent.
Yeah. And then, but they did also find pictures of murder and torture.
Like,
of the five dead girls. And then they found the tape. They found jewelry. They found the murder Mac, of course, you know, with all the tools in it, the toolbox. Everything just like Roy said it was. Larry pretended not to even know who the fuck Roy was. Like, and
no,
he pretended,
I don't know that
yeah,
either,
he,
huh?
Yeah, he pretended not to have anything to do with it up until pretty much.
He's the thief, the original thief.
Yes, the thief. Yeah. Pretty much up until they played that tape in court, which made a lot of people run out, a lot of people throw up. The prosecutor, one of the prosecutors, had to leave, and he didn't come back for 3 months. It was that horrible. And, then he kind of, it was his voice. It was clearly his voice. It was clearly him, you know? So Roy had already had his trial and everything. And he, you know, he pled guilty and he got life. He got like 45 years with the ability to ask for, what do you call it? For parole and after 30 years. And he just didn't even, 2010.
Did anybody ever show up for their hearings and stuff?
Like, I have no idea.
The
I know a lot of people did, not their family, no.
Really?
No. And anyways, Larry was ultimately found guilty, and he was sentenced to the death penalty. Of course, you know, he did that whole fucking rigmarole of the 25 years of appeals and blah, 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 where he finally died in 2019 at the age of 79 on San Quentin's death row. Because, as you know, since 2006, there hasn't been... there has not been a prisoner that's been put to death in California.
Right. The last wheelchair man fucking rolled in there and they fucking...
Yes. So, Paul Bynum, Sergeant Paul Bynum, he was so disturbed and so terrified by this story. It just haunted his dreams and he'd
tape.
Wake up in cold sweats. The pictures, all of it. And when he was 39 years old, during the McMartin preschool trial, he was going to testify for the... He was going to testify for the prosecution, actually. He started out as a private investigator for the defense, but then he seemed to think
the
that...
the wizards flying around and the fucking
yeah,
elephants.
Yeah, he seemed to think
around.
That the children were telling the truth. So he was going to testify for the prosecution, and he ended up just committing suicide. And in his suicide note, he stated that it was, you know, just the horror... that would not leave his mind and was terrorizing his you know, giving him nightmares and
the tape.
Just, yeah, the tape, the pictures, Larry Bittaker and Roy Lewis Norris, their crimes, fucked him up.
So he just kills himself. Why do you think whack these dudes, man?
Protective custody. They're dead now. But it's just horrible, you know, what they did to these girls. Beautiful girls from Torrance, Hermosa, Sunland, Redondo Beach.
And they get to live. These guys get to live because fucking their beds aren't fucking warm enough. Their fucking cells are fucking too, you know, whatever. They're too dirty. The grime.
All the things they complain about.
Yeah, and we can't touch them. I mean, I can't. I'm not going to go near them. They don't have trustees.
What?
They don't even have trustees. They only have CDC officers working them. The doctors want to fucking pick their brains.
That's ridiculous. Oh, yeah. I know. Because that one guy that, the Mindhunter guy, I can't think of his name right now, but he said that Larry Bittaker was one of the most disturbing, screwed up people that he's ever met in his entire life.
But the detective fucking killed himself over that shit. Oh, I want to hear that tape. I need to get my hands on that tape.
No, Brett. That's horrible.
I mean, it was fucking pretty scary thinking about a fucking homicide detective that killed himself. And the McMartin, he was attached to that, and the McMartin fucking shit.
Yeah, he's, like I said, he started out as a what do you call it? He was,
A private detective
for the defense. And then in his investigation, he decided that they actually were guilty. And he was going to testify for the prosecution or be a, what do they call that? When you testify. When you testify like a, I can't think of the name of it right now. A hostile witness. Hostile witness.
I used to work right across from there. I seen a lot of shit. I was like, what the fuck? They ruined that family. You know that?
Yeah, I think so too. I think that the stories were so outlandish and so outrageous. I think that who they should have fucking fucked with was the guy that was playing Santa Claus at the Hawthorne Mall, Whitey Schmelzer, who molested not only me, but a group of other kids, every kid in his neighborhood, all of his own children. And he got away with it. My mother and everybody went to the Hawthorne police. But look, Hawthorne's not that rich of a neighborhood. Manhattan Beach is.
Yeah, Hawthorne, you know? That's what they're whack.
So they have this big 10-year-long trial with a bunch of fantastical, ridiculous stories. Mm-hmm. And you got some real shit going down with Santa Claus at the fucking Hawthorne Mall. But anyway, all right, so thank you for listening.
Yep.
And don't let the sunshine fool you.
Yep, don't let the sunshine fool you. And, yeah.
We'll have another episode shortly.
Soon.
Yeah, shortly. 'Kay, so before we ended this episode, I wanted to clarify a few things, like the word that I couldn't think of was the Tourette syndrome when I was talking about how Roy probably muttered weird shit under his breath. The FBI agent's name is John E. Douglas, the one that said that Larry Bittaker was the worst, creepiest person he'd ever seen in all of life. And then I wanted to mention the victims by name. Slowly, Lucinda Lynn Schaefer, who went by Cindy. She died on June 24th, 1979. Andrea Joy Hall. She died on July 8th, 1979. Jacqueline, who went by Jackie Doris. I think her last name was Gilliam. And Jacqueline Leah Lamp, who went by Leah. Both died on September 3rd. They were 15 and 13 years old. They were friends. On October 31st, Shirley Lynette Ledford died. She was, I'm not sure how old she was. I think she was 18 or 19. And I wanted to go back to the Joe Gasinski thing and remind, or story, excuse me, and remind you that in case you know of anything or have anything to report, the Torrance Police Department's number is 310-328-3456. The detective's line is 310-618-5570. Also, if you know of any or have any missing persons, you can always look up the Charlie Project at thecharlieproject.org. You can also send tips about murders or other crimes that you might know of to You text CRIMES, capital C, capital R, capital I, capital M, capital E, capital S, to 274-637, or you can call 1-800-222-TIPS. Also, there's a group called Parents of Murdered Children, and you can get help, bereavement classes, just whatever. You can get support through them.
Audio glitch.
And the other number for the Parents of Murdered Children is 831-426-0874. I'm sure they can direct you to whatever city or county you live in across the United States. Also, there's a place that helps. There's a lot of places, but the one that I chose to tell you about is called the Tears Foundation Organization. In case you need help burying your child or any loved one that, you know, died, and you don't have the funds to lay them to rest, that email is emotionalsupport@thetearsfoundation.org, and the number is 253-200-0944. And also, when I was looking on findagrave.com, I found some really nice things that people had said about Leah Lamp. That's the 13-year-old girl, the brunette, the really pretty brunette. This was left by Pinoy Pride on October 18th, 2020, because that was her birthday. God bless you, Julie, on the occasion of your 55th birthday, Jacqueline. As one of God's dearest angels, please give us an open mind and a caring heart in a world of full of tolerance and misunderstanding. And then on September 3rd, which is the day she died, 2020, the same person put, God bless you, dearest soul, on your 41st angel day, Jacqueline. No hatred and harm shall ever befall you anymore. Nope. Only everlasting love and protection coming to you every step of your way. And I thought that was really beautiful. There's a lot of things that people have written about her.
That's cool.
And she's got like tons.
I gotta check some stuff out about that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then finally, left by Anonymous on December 7th, 2019, someone remembers, someone cares. Your name is whispered in someone's prayers. Yep. Okay, so thank you, and we will have another episode very shortly.
Yeah, don't let the sunshine fool you. I was gonna play it.
I don't know how appropriate that song is.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening to California PC 187, the podcast. Brett, Cheryl, Dutch, and me, Dirty Dan, appreciate and thank you for your time and attention. Remember, don't let the smile or the sunshine fool you. Oh,
is like a drum. I hear your rhythm, you feel so near. Oh, California, all senses clear.